Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Episodes drop every other Monday, where we discuss the biggest Joshi news, review shows, and preview the hottest upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're a new fan or an old fan, we've got something here for you at Jumping Bomb Audio.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back to Days of Thunder, the WCW Thunder rewatch podcast that you didn't ask for, but we did anyway, coming to you as part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, and powered by alargemanappears.com. I am your host, Stagger Lee Malone, and joining me today is longtime friend of the show, a man without whom there may not have been any Days of Thunder podcasts in the last couple of weeks. He is the host of the FWA pod, Nothing and Like It. He is Kieran Laforte. Kieran, welcome to Days of Thunder.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be back. I'm very excited to do this, particularly as I think it puts me in the rare company of just me and Erin Quinn as the only people who have done an episode with a Lee-less Dave, a Dave-less Lee, and an episode with the pair of you.
Oh, God, yeah. I would have to think, yeah, it's only the two of you.
Yeah. I checked.
See, you've done more homework for this than I have.
And the other thing that slightly worries me is my last appearance was your surprise return. So I'm slightly worried that Dave is hiding in my cupboard.
What's that? Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember. Yeah. Because you had obviously already been booked, and I told Dave I was ready to come back. Yep. Yeah. No,
like John Cena, back from injury months early.
Unfortunately, Dave is not hiding in the wings waiting to come out with some surprise entry music. But he will be back soon, we hope.
Tremendous.
But look, he's never going to hear this, so just if you ever want to say anything nice about him, say it now. But Kieran, before we get into the reason you are here...
Mm-hmm.
I just thought it'd be nice to have a little chat about your other podcasts, the FWA pods, Nothing and Like It. And I can't say Nothing and Like It without thinking of the man who said it the best, Alex Shane.
So the thing is, it's a bit like Play It Again, Sam. He never actually says nothing. He says nothing. But we'd already named it, and that's easier SEO. I bill it as the only podcast, thankfully, to chronicle the UK's Frontier Wrestling Alliance via its appearances on television, because all of it doesn't exist, and I think it's more fun that way. Also, it was kind of an excuse to review my own work, because I made the 2004 season of FWA television on the Wrestling Channel.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that until you started the pods, that you were actually heavily involved with the actual production of the FWA shows on the Wrestling Channel.
But if by heavily involved, you mean for the most part made the entire thing myself? Yes. I had some occasional help. There was some occasional like other editing of matches, and obviously I couldn't shoot all the matches myself. So we had like three or four camera ops, like usually freelancers that I would hire in per show. But I listed it out on one episode, and I can't remember it all off the top of my head, but I would write the presenter segments, go and shoot them with John Atkins, shoot the matches, hire the crew to shoot the matches, occasionally put up and take down the ring, edit everything together, and then physically deliver it to the Playout Centre in London. And very often, simply because of how much time it would take, and don't forget, this is 2004, technology isn't what it is today.
Mm-hmm.
So nothing is in HD. There is no solid state memory. So it's not just a card you take out of your camera and put it in your computer. It's a tape. Everything is analog. Linear, not analog. It's digital, but linear. Make that technical distinction. And I made the entire 26 episode run of the 2004 series on a computer I built myself in my spare bedroom, having never made anything more than I'd never made anything that was more than 23 minutes long. I'd never shot sport before. I'd never shot wrestling before.
That's incredible to me, because in my brief foray into the world of Irish wrestling, around would have been around a similar time, around 2004.
Irish Whip,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And obviously, being that Irish Whip also had its own TV show on mm-hmm. Wrestling Channel, and seeing how chaotic the production of that was,
yep.
I can only imagine the problems you had were likely tenfold, considering the size of production compared to the rinky-dinkness of Irish Whip.
Well, FWA was more rinky-dink than you'd think. there were my girlfriend at the time, who absolutely hated it, brought it home to me one day when she basically said, "They're running this out of your overdraft." Like, that company never made any money. They were frequently late in paying everybody, including me. Mm-hmm. It was a bit of a mess up and down. It was a swan. So to the outside, it looks relatively serene, but the legs are going 19 to the dozen under the water.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I just wanted to bring that up because, again, like I said, I was in around the UK, well, Irish and UK wrestling scene at the time, and it was a very exciting time, but also just, it was absolute chaos as well. And I do remember, recall watching many of the episodes, and it's amazing to me that you, like you say, you kind of, I don't want to say single-handedly, but we're like involved in so much of the back end of that.
There are some episodes of that season that I did legitimately make entirely by myself.
That's insane.
At the age of 24 years old, with no clue what I was doing.
And it ended up on Sky Television.
Yes.
Weekly.
Very quick aside. I dropped out of my media production course at university because I wasn't learning anything. I was learning more by borrowing their equipment and going shooting stupid action movies with my mates in the woods at the weekends, copying like fucking Jackie Chan stuff that we'd watched or whatever. I could not get a production job for 5 years. I was an office temp, and I was filming towards the end of that. I was filming FWA on the side. And then Alex Shane rang me up one day and went, "We've got this deal with TWC. You're the only person we know who knows how to shoot and edit. Do you want to make the TV show?" And I went, "If you can beat what I'm on each week as an office temp, yes." And he went, "All right then." And that's how I got the job. So that was legitimately my first ever media job, making a TV show by myself. And it was a fast learning experience on many levels. And it has led to, I mean, that was 21 years ago, and I'm still now a professional video editor.
Yeah.
So somehow.
A kind of an insane beginning to get you where you are today. But like, as you say, like, I know with the podcast, it's a lot of your master files that you're actually watching back, isn't it? It's not necessarily the TV show itself.
I have to give credit where it is due. Lee, who runs the FWA Files channel, has done an incredible job of finding stuff. There's only like a few things he really needs to complete the set effectively of everything that was released by the FWA. What I've contributed is I found a box full of master tapes. It's not the complete run.
Okay.
Since I ended that job, I've never had a complete run. And amazingly, a lot of these mini DV tapes were still in great condition. So I digitized them, and to get them to play back correctly on YouTube, it helps to up-res them.
Okay.
So there's about a dozen episodes, about half the run, that is available in sort of fake HD on YouTube, and it looks shockingly good considering when it was shot and what it was shot on. And these are That's just additional stuff. So he had all of the TV, but for example, some of the episodes might be missing the beginning or the end where the tape didn't, where the video recorder didn't record off the skybox or whatever, or it might be the censored version because I had to output an uncensored and a censored version each week.
Oh, okay. I never realized that.
Stupidly, because the only time it ever aired uncensored was in its first run. So I might have just gone, I should have just gone, fuck it, or bleep it, I guess, and just done a censored version to run in all time slots. But there was me being a purist and doing a doing an uncensored one as well. Yeah. So a lot of the episodes that he had up as like censored and only off VHS are now master quality, better than master quality, and uncensored.
That's insane. I can't imagine the FWA had a lot of stuff to be censored, though, at the time, did
it? Oh, loads.
Oh, really?
Yeah, tons.
Okay.
So this is, it's 2004. This is still the year of the chair shot to the head.
Yeah.
There was loads of swearing, particularly from the crowd. It is 2004, so some of the words the crowd use, we do not use anymore.
That would be true,
particularly in relation to what Johnny Storm might like to do on his weekends. That was popular. There was, in particular, one moment where I saw two guys going over a spot and one of them had a rope, and I went, if you hang him over the ropes, we can't put that on TV, don't do it. And he went, yeah, and then he hung him over the ropes during the match.
It wouldn't be like a wrestler to not listen to somebody they don't respect, would it?
Yeah.
I'm not saying they didn't at the opposite.
Oh no, they definitely didn't respect me. No, I was a skinny dweeb who ordered them around and told them to do promos into a camera, so
God, yeah, fucking memory. So listen, we could talk about the FWA and the Wrestling Channel and all of that great stuff for many hours, and you know, you do. But we are here on our show, the special edition number 3 in Dave's absence, to talk about the TNT special movie of the year 2000, or one of them, Shutter Speed, starring the one, the only, Steve Borden.
Yeah,
better known to all of us as Sting. But so this was your choice. So again,
hang on a minute. Please don't frame it like that.
well, I have to explain this. Like I did with Aaron and like I did with Alan, I gave them a couple of options and said, look, we're going to do some special shows. We're not going to do Thunder in Dave's absence. Everyone was very happy with that decision. So, you know, Aaron did like a skip scramble that we like to do. Alan had to pick your poison. Picked all the PG-13 stuff that we watched. So you decided you wanted to do Days of Thunder at the movies, because we have talked about
this. I think it's less Days of Thunder at the movies and more Days of Thunder idly switches on TNT at 9 p.m. on a Friday and goes, ah, this will do.
So you selected this movie that we've heard mention of many times on the show. And for whatever reason, Dave, who's very meticulous about putting things into our timeline, hence why we are 5 years into the show and only two plus years into the run of TV. So Dave is very meticulous about putting things in, but for whatever reason did not put Shutter Speed in. I can't imagine why.
Maybe he's already seen it. That would explain it.
Well, I you know what? I did text him after I watched it and asked, had he seen it? He said, yeah, I remember kind of half asleep watching it once.
Wow.
And he gave some opinions, but so I just want to say right off the bat, I'd never seen this before. Maybe it was just the mood I was in, maybe I'm being very generous. I didn't think this was horrendous.
No, it isn't. I mean, this is a bit of an end of a show thing. It's not bad. It's not good, but it's not bad. It just sort of exists. Like, it fills 2 hours on TNT. That's what it does.
So this copy that we watched actually is the full 2-hour broadcast. It is available on YouTube. We'll have the link will be in the show notes. So this was made. I actually noticed Eric Bischoff and his good friend Jason Hervey are, of course, executive producers on this. So I'd like to imagine this was the last successful project of Eric Bischoff's career. And because, you know, it wouldn't be Days of Thunder if we didn't get a shot in Eric Bischoff.
Made as much money as WCW anyway, in the final year.
Now, I will say, I think, like Dave, you are more of a movie buff than I ever will be.
I have to say, If I thought I was going to do a Days of Thunder movie episode, I thought it would be with Dave and not you.
So, in a little bit of a turnaround, why don't you lead me through the movie?
All right. Oh, my God. It's good job I took notes.
Well, see, again, I didn't prepare you for this because I had a feeling your notes would be much better than mine. And again, you are much more of a movie aficionado. And obviously you will pick up on certain production notes that I may have missed. So why don't you lead us through this incredible production?
All right. Well, we open in Berlin. I noted it was shot so tightly it had to be a set.
Oh, my they God. Did, it was 100% a set.
They didn't even spring for a stock footage establishing shot, I noticed.
No.
This thing cost $4 million, by the way, this movie. Yeah.
I struggle off the top of my head to think of where the $4 million went, other than maybe the shots of that home that Steve and...
Or maybe they bought the thing.
Because that thing was in, like, the Hollywood Hills, right?
So, you say that. This is set in Seattle.
Okay.
But shot in Vancouver.
Oh, okay.
So God knows where that house is. It's an incredible house. It's like, have you seen Iron Man? It's like Tony Stark's house.
Exactly. That was the vibes it was given off, right? Yeah. In the clips.
It might even be the same place. Who knows? My first note is, why are there so many massive bags of rubbish out in the street?
Apparently Germany doesn't dispose of it.
Apparently not.
Listen, that explains Alec Wright's booking for his entire tenure, if that's what Eric Bischoff thought of Germany.
Yeah. So a sweaty, nervous man called Knox is chased by a gun-wielding Englishman who I have called Hit Bloke throughout my whole notes.
Yeah, we never do get a name for him, do we?
Oh, he has a name in the credits, but I can't remember what it is. Knox comes around the corner to an outdoor restaurant area and calls out to his friend Mark. Mark is the only person who reacts to this man shouting in the street, despite three gunshots having been fired beforehand. We're into the room territory already. So Knox gets shot in the back and killed. Mark takes up a camera that Knox has dropped and runs with it. Hit Bloke is in hot pursuit. Mark drops the camera. As it hits the ground, it takes a photo, somehow activating a flash despite not having one attached. He picks it up again and hides in someone's house. By the look of it,
a door was just open and he goes in and there's nobody there.
I think the couple we see walking down the street are supposed to have come out of it, but it's one of these weird European things where the door opens out rather than in. Does your front door open in or out?
In.
Exactly. So does mine, but this one opened out.
Again, the most obvious thing of a movie set is, oh, well, that's just the way the door goes and that's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, bloke put on the wrong side.
Yeah.
Although there was, I did know when I had a work trip to Finland some years ago, and I noticed every door opened outwards. Finnish listeners, please confirm, is this a thing in Finland?
That's insane.
Yeah, I nearly killed a waiter in a hotel when I my door too quickly because I didn't realise. He's hiding in the house. I was disappointed he didn't get savaged by an Alsatian that had been left behind. Hit Bloke returns to his boss, who is disappointed that they didn't get their camera back. This is all shot in what is very clearly the same two or three street and junction sets over and over again, because the same bits of scenery keep appearing behind people. Your opening titles are lots of macro shots of camera functions, so right, real tight close-ups of dials being turned and buttons being pressed and that kind of thing.
Very, very futuristic for the year 2000, I'm sure.
I'm sure. Seattle. Sting is lurking in the rafters. Sorry, Sting is lurking in the lobby of a fancy hotel. Force of habit. This is where we get co-executive producers Eric Bischoff and Jason Hervey. Mm-hmm. Sting, I'm gonna end up calling him Sting throughout most of this.
Okay, we should say his name is Detective Riley Davis.
Yes, a man called Sting is a cop called Riley.
But we do not learn this until at least like 15 minutes into the movie.
There are many times throughout this film you don't learn characters' names until late on. Mm-hmm. It was well over an hour before I found out the main villain's name.
Oh, what was that again? Actually, I forget.
There you go. All the other bad guys call him Mr. Diamond.
Okay. I don't even think I got that note.
It doesn't come up much.
But like even Riley's wife-to-be, I didn't catch her name until like well into the movie.
Yep.
But anyway.
And I think he calls her the wrong name at some point as well.
Oh, God.
Her name is Kenzie, and I think there is a shot where he calls her Kennedy.
Okay.
But this is off, what we are watching is off a very old VHS tape on YouTube, so it could be a tape warp or anything. But there is definitely an extra syllable in one take of this, for sure.
Okay.
So he stalks a pregnant woman up a couple of flights of stairs and into the women's toilet, where he brutally stabs her in the stomach in front of witnesses. But it's okay, because this reveals that the bump is actually full of coke, and the WCW locker room sprints in from off camera. And that the pregnant lady is actually a man in disguise. And this is where we find out that, yes, he is a cop.
Mm-hmm.
Cut to a traffic light. Riley is on his way to Sturgis as he pulls up on his motorbike next to a sexy lady in a Porsche Boxster. They give each other a saucy look and then race. And he thinks he's won, but she's actually slowing down as we see he's getting pulled over for speeding.
Yes, it's that classic unspoken drag race that we see in many movies.
Yes, RuPaul hiding in the back of the Boxster.
Do you think this character was written to have his own car, but because, you know, it's Sting and WCW, they had to have a bike?
Quite possibly. So the woman in the car is this Kenzie woman, and she is a model. We cut to her fashion shoot and catwalk rehearsal as Sting arrives and is creepy to her as well.
We should point out that... Daisy Fuentes is the aforementioned Kenzie. I have no idea what she went on to do in her career.
Nothing, as far as the most famous person in this is Sting.
That's actually something we should bring up. The rest of the actors in this, you will not recognize any of them.
So there are one or two, and I'll bring them up when we get to them.
Okay. Well, yeah, no, I didn't do any research on her, but like Daisy Fuentes is not an AME as a character.
Daisy Fuentes was in one episode of Baywatch.
Okay.
She was in one episode of Family Guy, one episode of the Larry Sanders Show. She's done one episode of about a dozen TV shows.
So either she's not very good, which is true, or she's also insufferable and doesn't get long-lasting gigs.
Quite possibly. She only has 20 actress credits on IMDb. She has more as herself, so what was she doing? Oh, right, she's got a podcast. Oh,
okay.
All right, fine. Okay. How do you get podcasts listed on IMDb? We need to look into this. So, yeah, anyway, this is their funny little sex game they play. He says she was speeding, and she responds, "So cuff me." And it becomes apparent that they're together, and this is their little game. Yeah. I noted we are 11 minutes into this and we've had the reveal that Sting is a cop, the reveal that the pregnancy bump was a drug haul, the reveal that the pregnant woman was a man in drag, the reveal that the model knew about and had spotted the traffic cop, and the reveal that she and Sting are together. Yet somehow, none of this is exciting. Cut to a police station. Riley is busting out of a shirt so white it got this gig off years of doing Daz commercials. Like, you could have projected the movie on this t-shirt.
I will say, I feel like Sting got in better shape for this movie than he did for Starrcade 97.
Yes.
If Sting had showed up like this for Starrcade 97, Hogan would have done the clean job 1-2-3.
There's a bit later on where we see him in bed, and I'm like, this is the most topless Sting I've seen since he gave up the surfer gimmick.
Well, there was that one TNA pay-per-view. Where he went without the singlet.
Yeah. But yeah. And then decided never again.
And then went, nah, fuck that.
Yeah. So in the tradition of police movies, the captain is a ball buster.
I loved the captain is such the police captain in every movie.
Yes, yeah. And he gets on Riley's case about the hotel incident, but Riley fires back with a line I found genuinely funny. Don't you think it's a little unusual that someone could get that pregnant in 3 weeks, especially a man?
Hey, listen, made sense.
Yeah. So an inconsequential cop by the name of Dermot, I don't know how we found out his name so early, gives Riley the camera from Berlin, saying it was dropped off by his friend Mark. Riley says, hey, are you eating peanut butter and cream cheese on a donut?
Yeah, what a random thing to bring up.
Yeah. So, there was a place I used to work years and years ago where we got free breakfast, and very often it would be bagels. So in the winter, in the summer, I would have cereal. In the winter, I would do bagels. Mm-hmm. And what I would usually do is I would toast a bagel, and on one half I would put cream cheese, and the other half I would put peanut butter. These would be eaten separately. My boss saw me one morning, and she looks at it, and she went, oh, that's a good idea. And she went and did it herself. And as she came out of the kitchen, I saw her put the two halves together. And I was like, what are you doing? And she went, you don't eat it like this. And I went, no, these are two separate items. What is wrong with you?
Did she eat it?
Yes. She claimed it was fine, but I think she just wanted to save face. Yeah.
So I love that you, unbeknownst to yourself, had taken something from this movie.
Yes.
That you probably hadn't seen yet.
Yeah, exactly. No. So doing for this show, I'd never... this is the first time I'd seen it.
Oh, okay. So you...
I'd kind of wanted to since I knew about it, because like it's a wrestler in a movie.
Yeah.
And, you know, finding out about it in 2000 or whatever, you know, I'm younger and more naive than to the idea of wrestlers in movies.
I wonder, was this shown on TNT over
was here? Was it? I don't... So, as far as I can tell, no.
Okay.
I've done some digging, and it was shown on TV in the US and Sweden, and went to VHS in Argentina, Finland, the Netherlands, and Hungary.
Okay. So
Sweden had to wait 6.5 years.
Oh. I gotta imagine one of those Dutch VHS copies of this movie ended up in the UK at some point.
Shoot this bird. Apologies to all Dutch listeners. I won't be allowed back again. It's fine. Right. So Riley leaves Mark a message on his aunt's phone. Remember those. And we cut to him somberly looking at a photo of himself and an old man in his locker. And this triggers a brief flashback of the old man getting shot. I called this guy Ernest Borg 5 because he looked mostly like Ernest Borg 9, but wasn't him.
This movie had more flashbacks than your average episode of Family Guy.
Yes.
There were so many flashbacks.
But all of the same scene.
Yes. Because, again, it's a very small budget movie, so you can't have any story building. It's just this one scene that matters in the whole thing.
Yep, absolutely. Riley goes home to his gigantic house, as we've talked about. Bumped into someone called Heather on his massive driveway. She has been looking after Sam, whoever that is, and apparently has been on a date with someone called Perry, and they took some naughty photos.
Hang on, was it Perry or Harry? I thought Harry was the kid's name.
Hold on.
Sorry, I'm saying kids.
I am on IMDb.
The guy.
Apparently he also has a surname. He is Perry Evans.
Okay, so I got it wrong.
Yeah. It is hard to understand. I'll give you that for sure. So before we cut inside and Riley goes to greet this lazy-looking Labrador, did you also think Sam was going to turn out to be a toddler?
Yeah, like...
And she'd been babysitting.
Yeah, I was thinking, okay, obviously it's a child that this woman is looking after.
No. It's a dog that needs a walk, apparently. Couldn't wait for Sting to get home to walk his dog.
Now, listen. If I could have a model walk my dog, I probably would as well.
Fair point. So Kenzie's making dinner and they rapidly run through back and forth single line exposition dialogue. Your brother Mark's back in town. Heather said he came by today. He dropped this off. Oh, it's a camera. Right, it's just single lines backwards and forwards. And Riley points out, importantly to our plot, that only one photo has been taken on this camera. Cut to Mark getting tied to a chair and beaten by hit bloke. And when I say beaten, the first blow is a proper he didn't quite get all of it back fist that is gently placed next to his head in a close-up.
Again, it's Eric Bischoff. He has no idea of actual physical contact and to be filmed.
So it was at this point where I looked up who Hit Bloke was.
Okay.
His name is Mackenzie Gray. He is actually from Toronto. He's in Man of Steel. He was in Riverdale. And he had a reasonable sized part in the TV show Legion, which was like a Marvel offshoot show.
Okay.
He spends most of his time as the voice of John Hammond in the Jurassic Park video games.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so apparently they spared every expense.
Look, this guy obviously gets consistent work, so he, you know.
Yeah.
He's probably the most successful person in the movie.
Quite possibly. Steve Borden might have something.
Well, no,
like
I
that.
Mean, other than Steve Borden.
Yeah, yeah. We're holding him on a higher plateau. Yeah. So the baddies ransack Mark's place. They find Riley's message, which tips them off that Mark doesn't have the camera anymore. So they don't need him, and it's fine to kill him. Mm-hmm. And Sting has a flashback nightmare about guns in a bar and the old man from the photo, ending with another man who we don't know yet holding a gun, yelling, "Dad!" Ad break.
Yes. So, as I said, we have this straight from TNT copy. So we do get all of the great year 2000s.
Yes.
American adverts that we...
I still don't know what Texas Instruments were advertising. Random technology of the year 2000.
It was the year 2000. All it needed to do was look flashy.
Yeah. My favorite one was the ad for the local car dealership.
Mm-hmm.
It is, the acting is amazing, the southern accents are wonderful, and the production value is non-existent.
So there's a couple of ads. The first one... General Motors apparently sell a car to a General Motors car owner every 60 seconds.
Wow.
Yeah, I was like, that can't be fucking right, but, you know. There's a Papa John's ad that we see many times. There's a 10-10-220 ad. Obviously, we are very aware of 10-10-220 from the numerous sponsorships of pay-per-views.
Is that the one with Christopher Lloyd and the chimp?
No, 10-10-220 was the fake talk show. Oh, yeah, it was. Yes,
and the guy they're talking to is Christopher Lloyd, right, and there's a chimp is one of the other guests. Yeah.
That was quite the thing. We see an ad for cotton, the fabric of our lives.
Yes, not only is there an ad for cotton, there's also an ad for the concept of cheese later on in another ad break.
But we see this cotton ad, I think, two or three times as well across numerous ad
breaks. It's one of the better ones, though. Like, it's really nicely shot.
You weren't just going, why are they advertising cotton?
I mean, hey, the South, get out of polyester, wear cotton.
I was just going to say, it was like everywhere you're wearing polyester and pleather in the year 2000s, the cotton industry had to like start buying ad time on TNT.
So the car dealership ads meant I was able to track down where this copy came from. Yeah, so they are Burns... I think Burns is the name
Ford,
of the chain.
Auto dealership.
Burns Ford, and they have Burns Chevrolet later. Mm-hmm. And the Chevrolet dealership still exists and is in Rock Hill, South Carolina, which is about 40 minutes outside of Charlotte, North Carolina. So appropriately for something WCW related, this came off of Carolina's feed.
That's incredible. We did see an ad for Bell Atlantic Mobile. Advertising a Nokia 5180 for just $40.
Yeah. Is that the one where you get the free exchangeable faceplates as well?
Yeah, the three faceplates that you can change color, And then the TNT advert for Steel.
Oh.
Starring Shaquille O'Neal.
And his terrible acting.
Oh, my God. Do you know what? Seeing the adverts for that probably made this movie so much better.
And Steel wasn't a TV movie. I don't know if it went into cinemas. It definitely went straight to video in this country.
Mm-hmm. I can remember... many of Shaq's movies being straight to fucking VHS quality over here.
Yeah, best place for them. Simply because straight to bin doesn't exist.
But yeah, that was our first collection of adverts. But very, very year 2000.
I was quite disappointed that the one thing we didn't get throughout any of the ad breaks was the standard issue American medicine ad. With the reams of spoken small print at the end of about the side effects.
Yeah. No, we didn't get one of them, unfortunately. Or we didn't get one of the, you know, the classic, ROH ad that would be on ROH, like the medical, oh, if you have this, or this, you may need this person.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we're back to the movie, so we'll go back to Kieran.
Oh, yes, we are indeed. So Riley goes to see his photographer mate, who is the Perry who had the sexy date with Heather.
Mm-hmm.
We know this because they are making out as Riley arrives. And Perry is given the film from the camera to develop. At the police station, Captain Bradford, his name is telling Riley about a new detective named Cliff, who has just passed all his detectiving exams with the highest score in history and will be transferring into the unit. And Sting is miffed because it's his brother. At the shooting range, Riley is loosing off a few rounds and is seemingly so good that all the bullets are passing through the same hole. Two booths down, another cop starts doing the same thing. So Riley shifts his stance and pettily shoots down the guy's target and goes down to confront him. And this is Cliff.
I liked that one shot took down the target that's supposed to withstand like a full round of bullets.
Yeah, I think the idea was he hit the frame, but there's no like ping
no.
or anything like that to show that that's where he's hit. He just fires in another direction and this thing hits the ground. So they have some petulant, passive aggressive dialogue. Cliff wants to make amends for something, but Riley's not interested. Riley and Kenzie discuss all this over dinner, and I noticed they're wearing the same clothes as when Riley got home. So I think the Mark interrogation and the visit to the photographer got moved up earlier in the edit.
Yeah, so I can't be the only one that noticed the time lapse in the scenes here was very out of order.
Yes. I kept track as I went on. I am pretty sure some stuff got moved, particularly... Mm-hmm. Well, we'll get to it later on. There is a line later on that pretty much confirms it.
Okay. Because many times Sting is in that classic white shirt, but then he'll go somewhere else for a moment and be in a totally different set of clothes.
Yeah.
And then he goes somewhere else and all of a sudden he's back in the white tee.
Yeah. So Kenzie wants Riley to open up and give Cliff a chance, but he gets all huffy and storms off. That night, she is woken by him tunelessly poking individual keys on their massive grand piano and goes to give him...
What an asshole.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if you had a piano in your house and your family are sleeping, you're not going to go downstairs and just...
Yeah. so she goes and gives him a semi-naked comforting hug and he goes, oh, did I wake you? And she goes, no, the piano did.
Very passive-aggressive.
Yes. So this added fuel to my editing theory because this will make perfect sense to come chronologically after he wakes up from the nightmare.
Okay.
Which was before the ad break. Next day, Cliff is welcomed to the police station despite already being at the gun range the day before. So this has also been moved.
Yes. Yeah.
And then we go to him meeting Kenzie at a restaurant. And I didn't recognize her at first because this is off a VHS from 2000 and she straightened her hair. This is the only scene where she has straight hair.
They had to draft in a different actress for that day.
I thought he was going on a date with a different model. That's what this looks like a setup for. Because he's like, wow, I've seen you on these billboards. It's great to meet you in person at last.
Yeah, the two brothers pulling different models, yeah.
Yeah. I thought this might be the second brother trying to pull the same model. Who knows? Turns out, firstly, as I said, they've never met before. And secondly, it's a setup because she's also invited Riley, who is annoyed at having been duped and storms off again immediately.
Look, anybody that's watched WCW will be well aware that Steve Borden is a very moody man. And, you know, it's good. Good that the role they gave him involved him being very moody and doing many stares into the distance.
Yes. So back at the station, the captain breaks the news about Mark and Riley. Mark being the guy who was killed. Remember him? Riley goes to his apartment. Being a homicide detective, Cliff is already there, and so is Perry because he's the forensics photographer. Riley lets on to Cliff that it's Kenzie's brother, and teary-eyed says, he was going to be my best man.
That's when it gets to be real TV special movie, our TV movie special.
Yes.
That was the first line that really went, oh, God, yeah. They're going there.
Despite being a narcotics detective, Riley convinces the captain to put him on the case as well, citing his personal connection, which I'm sure in every other movie I've seen like this is grounds for him not being on the case.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And he also cites Cliff's inexperience, and we go to another ad break.
Mm-hmm.
Two quick things. You talked about Sting's wardrobe.
Yes.
For the rest of the movie, it is mostly jeans, white t-shirt under an unbuttoned red flannel shirt,
yes.
Leather jacket and fingerless leather gloves. Have you ever seen The Breakfast Club?
I have not seen it, but I do know the certain look you are going to bring.
Right?
Soon. Yeah.
Doesn't it look like Judd Nelson's character has cleaned up his act and joined the force?
Yeah, and like moved on 10 years from The Breakfast Club. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that makes the movie much more fun if you think it's, what's his name? Bender is the character, isn't it? Yeah,
that would work. What was your second name? Yeah.
The captain is played by Gary Chalk.
Okay.
Gary Chalk, his day job, when Peter Cullen isn't doing it, he's the other voice of Optimus Prime.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So you have to back up Optimus Prime.
Yes. Yeah.
They really went all out on this cast.
Yeah. What's Latin for second? He'd be Optimus Second rather than Optimus Prime. Optimus Secundus.
Oh, God. Well, speaking of second, we're on to our second ad break. Here we get to see the first advert, which we will see many times throughout the rest of the movie. The Blockbuster Guaranteed to Be There special this month.
Unfortunately, it's Martin Lawrence in Blue Streak.
Look, I'm not going to lie, it's a movie I've seen many times.
I haven't seen it. Let me just text my friend who used to work in Blockbuster and ask him how many copies of Blue Streak they had in 2000.
It was many. Many. Mm. That's how many. Yeah, I've definitely seen that movie and definitely rented it at some point. Yeah, God, what was the other ads? We got the cotton ad again. This was something that I'm sure you would have been very interested in, and Dave definitely would have been. A personal journey through American cinema with Martin Scorsese.
That seemed a bit highbrow to go in the middle of this film, didn't it?
Yeah. Totally out of place.
Yeah, a special of him talking his way through, you know,
and I think it was
the movie industry from 1900 to 2000 or whatever.
I think
it was
a special thing. I think they said broadcast over 2 or 3 days on TCM.
Yeah.
Like, that was a great getting the year 2000.
Yeah. hey, Turner had a lot of money.
We also see a Greyhound ad for $69 because, ha, 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 69.
Ah, clever.
And yeah, I think there was nothing else good on that break.
No, not really. We get to see a lot of repeats, particularly we get to see a lot of a lot of TV spots for Steel.
Listen, you got to give them credit. They at least pushed it.
Yeah. Oh, I think that's next week's movie. That's why they're pushing it. So we get another new character. Riley goes to see Kenzie and Mark's agent. Oh, Mark is also a model, by the way. Was also a model.
So he was a model and a photographer, right?
Or was he the photographer?
Or was it that he was the
photographer? So either
friend?
He or Knox were also a model. Yeah. And either he or Knox were... No, Mark was a model because they mention... Or was it Knox? Shit, one of them was in Calvin Klein ads. It doesn't matter. They're two. Both of them are fucking dead. It doesn't matter.
Well, Kenzie says herself and her brother... modeled as kids.
Right, and maybe he just, you know,
yeah,
preferred being behind the camera in the end. So yes, anyway, he goes to see the agent, Griffin, who can't decide where his accent is coming from or going to. I looked him up. He's from Dublin.
He is the...
He is, yes. The actor was born in Dublin.
Ah, okay. What's his name?
Great question. Let me find out. His name is Gerard Plunkett.
Oh, wow, that's a good Irish name. I mean, his acting is awful.
Yes. We can say that about most of this cast. So Riley breaks the news about Mark's death and asks about the camera. Griffin knows nothing, but fills him in about the existence of Knox. Somewhat pointless shot of Riley on his bike relating this info over the phone to someone I assumed was Cliff, but given their interaction in the very next scene just seconds later, probably wasn't. Might have been the captain. Who knows? So Cliff and Riley have a tense conversation. Perry arrives with the photo from the Berlin camera and says the shutter and aperture were way off and so was the focus. He's surmising this photo was a mistake. Mm-hmm. He says he sent the negative to the FBI for them to run through their TS-1 computer to do something that is literally impossible. Supposedly it can reprocess the photo according to the shutter, aperture and focus settings you dial in. No, it fucking can't, especially not in 2000.
I was going to ask you as a producer of content, is this something...
Careful, that sounds like I've got an OnlyFans. I don't, by the way.
You sure?
Yeah. No one wants to see these feet.
But yeah, and I was going to ask, you know, somebody as you'd be familiar with that kind of stuff, like obviously you're saying even now this is not something that's possible.
No, there was a camera called the Lytro, which... doesn't look anything like this camera, came out way after this and could do something like that in post-production, but that's only because it took an unbelievable amount of pictures and you were essentially using a computer to combine bits to get the perfect shot that you wanted.
Okay.
This is where Cliff confirms my re-edit theory, by the way, with an info dump where he says that Mark's time of death has been placed between 7 and 10 last night. But as far as we have seen, 2 nights have passed.
Yes.
Yeah. There was not, I've called them Nightmare Night and Piano Night, and Mark was killed on Nightmare Night. His own place has been trashed, which must have taken ages because of how big it is.
and we find he finds Sam down in a fucking basement I like that we Sam didn't know had, was there.
Have you ever seen dogs when they're looking innocent? He's like, this one definitely wasn't me. I didn't rip that cushion. I didn't knock that over. He also finds Heather dead in one of his six bathtubs. At that moment, he gets a phone call from Kenzie at the fashion show, and she's trying to apologize for the restaurant, and he's trying to warn her that some bad shit is happening, during which he tells us to shut up and listen, which she responds to with, don't talk to me like that, and hangs up on him. Well done, Steve. Ever the negotiator, ever the diplomat.
Don't listen, as a married man, it's always great to say
has that got you where you are in life?
Always well. Yeah. Always went ends well. That's why I
did it work on your daughter when you're trying to put her to bed.
Oh God! Even at 3 years old, I get told.
Yeah. In a sequence that looked like it was edited by a chimp with a lawnmower, we intercut between Kenzie's catwalk show and her getting kidnapped backstage at gunpoint by hit bloke. This is also covered in a strobe light that made it really hard to watch.
Like, have you ever watched any of the episodes that we're watching?
Few, if none.
Do you recall the WCW?
The
Saturday
last
night
one
adverts?
I remember seeing was it was in a nightclub setting. Are they still running? Okay.
Yes. So that's the current WCW that they are advertising. So it's that kind of nightclub flashy. Yeah. Perry Saturn is going to take on Disco Inferno. that's what this fashion show reminded me of.
Kenzie's friend suspects something is up, comes over to question Hit Bloke, and he shoots her, and she flops onto the end of the catwalk, sparking what I called strobe lit mayhem. Sting arrives too late to what is now an active murder scene and is told by a uniformed cop what has happened. And he yells to nobody in particular, somebody had to have seen something, which I guess was his big line for the trailer.
He's not a very good...
Doesn't do an awful lot of detecting, it turns out. 47 minutes in, we finally see the crime boss again from Berlin in his factory where they are minting counterfeit euros. Yeah, don't forget, the euro is only a year old at this point. So this is up to date and modern.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
There you are. That's your credit shutter speed. On with the review. Kenzie is dragged by, she's dragged in by Hit Bloke, and through his dialogue with the big bad guy, is finally clued in that her brother is dead. And I was actually shocked and impressed at how understatedly this was handled. So she says, my brother gave Riley that camera. What does he have to do with this? And they respond, nothing. Not anymore. You have my sympathies. And that's when the penny drops. It's not like a moustache twirling, ha ha ha, mm-hmm. We shoved him off a balcony in his own apartment and kicked the shit out of him.
Again, the guy who's, you know, like just the little brother.
Yes.
His fucking apartment has a balcony. These are some incredibly rich people.
So we are at Sting's place. Perry is understandably having trouble taking photos of the corpse of the woman he banged and took sexy photos of just 3 days ago. Apparently, yeah.
Allegedly.
He would like people to think anyway, I guess. Captain and Sting walk and talk, and Riley is warned to keep his head straight despite two of his friends now being killed and his fiancée disappearing. Ad break, advert for cheese. Oh, the ad for cheese also has Dewey from Malcolm in the Middle in it. The little kid right at the front. The website is legitimately ilovecheese.com and sadly does not work anymore.
Well, I don't know what I'm going to get Dave onto when he gets back.
A large man appears
that
is no more.
Patreon money to good use. I don't know who TNT thought they had watching, but advertising Jaguar S-types.
Is Jaguar owned by GM?
Was not what I expected.
Hmm.
Oh, maybe. Maybe. But yeah, in between our Jaguar ads, we get ads for Sonic.
Oh.
That food looked horrendous.
Or no, Sonic wasn't the worst. Did you see the ad for Shoney's?
Yes.
Yeah, with the shot of what they're calling Grandma's meatloaf, which just looked like two pieces of fried corned beef with ketchup over the top. Yeah. It looked fucking horrible. All the food in that restaurant looked horrible.
Shoney's with their blue plate special and their hot southern style veggies was apparently a selling point.
Disgusting.
Well, you do know Scott Steiner owns multiple Shoney's.
Does he?
Yeah.
How did he get his shape if he's eating that? Oh, I guess he's not eating that. No, he doesn't eat his own.
Well, I don't know. Have you seen Scott Steiner recently?
Oh, no.
Yeah, there you go.
He hasn't come after me for taking the martial arts title off him last time I was on this show. Thankfully.
Well, the big ad on this collection of adverts,
and you do mean big.
Oh, yeah.
Because this was 2 minutes long.
Extended commercial. It's the TNT behind the scenes of the Sports Illustrated Year 2000 Swimsuit Special.
Yes.
Featuring Damon Wayans.
Yes. And I think this is so long ago, Heidi Klum was one of the models rather than a TV presenter.
She wasn't even like the first one featured. I think she was like the fourth or fifth.
No, she was just an other model.
Yeah. I can't remember who it was that was in all of the shots with Damon Wayans. I can't remember her name.
Oh, I can't remember her name either. And I'm not gonna Google this. My computer will explode.
But look, I'm not gonna lie. Would 14-year-old me in the year 2000 watch this? Absolutely, I would have.
I would have been 20 with a long-term girlfriend. So if I'd been caught with this on my TV, we would have had a chat, I think.
It looked awful.
Yes.
I mean, look.
It is the swimsuit issue. I was going to say, and quite misogynistic as well. Like, particularly in the way Wayans is talking to his co-hosts.
Uh-huh. They're playing
chess, aren't they? Scrabble. Yes.
Damon Wayans, of all people, speaking down to a model like, you're so intelligent.
Yeah.
It's like, fucking hell. But yeah, 2 minutes, and it felt every second of it.
It certainly did. Oh, Christ, how long is the actual show? I don't want to know. We're back at Sting Manor. Detective Brother picks up a photo of him, Riley, and their dad, triggering a more detailed flashback about what happened in the bar. At the station, the police finally find out that Knox was shot and killed in Berlin. I say finally, the time frame of this film does feel much longer than it actually is.
Mm-hmm.
Supposedly only a day or two have passed.
Yeah, it's like...
But it feels like it's taken a long time for them to find out information.
It's like the murder in Berlin is supposed to have happened like at most 3 days ago because Mark has gotten back to the US.
Yes.
Given Riley the camera, been murdered...
Yes.
Riley has had a nightmare.
Yes.
Falling out with his brother.
Yes.
Again. And, like, now Kenzie is kidnapped. So it's like the story they're telling is it's multiple days, but it's really not.
Yeah. It's very, very odd.
Yeah.
They get ready to run a trace on the baddie calling Riley, but he's told to pretend the call is about something else or they'll kill Kenzie. And he does. He's like, this isn't a good time to talk about flower arrangements. So the police kill the trace and he's told to bring the camera to a multi-story car park.
I have to ask, if they were tracing the call, would that not mean multiple people could have heard the call?
I don't know. I mean,
when you think of your classic 80s cop movies... And they're tracing a call. They all have the headphones on going, okay, I need to hear this.
Yeah, kill the trace doesn't mean mute your headphones at the same time, does it?
No.
No, good point. I didn't think of that. So we go off to the car park. Riley hands over the camera on the promise that Kenzie will be released in 1 hour. At that exact moment, Cliff and the cops show up and immediately start shooting. They take down one goon, but the second one makes a break for it in his truck, and Riley gives chase on the Sting cycle. The budget is so low that the chase never leaves the car park, although the stunt driver driving the truck impressively manages to tripod it on every corner.
Mm-hmm.
He gets one wheel off the ground every time he goes around the corner.
Like, in my imagination, the US is just filled, like, chock full of empty car parks. Where drug deals and fucking shootings happen every other night.
I'm trying to think if I've ever been in a multi-story car park in the US where a drug deal or a shooting has happened. Not while I was there, let's say that.
I didn't know you went to WrestleMania weekend.
I was in a long distance relationship with someone who lived in Dallas around the time of the Dallas WrestleMania.
Oh, okay.
And she had no interest in wrestling, but obviously knew I was a wrestling fan. Mm-hmm. And I got a message that was like, why are these people in wrestling shirts walking around? I'm like, there's 100,000 people. Have you not seen any local advertising for the 100,000 people coming to your town to watch WrestleMania? She's like, no, so I've seen nothing.
That's insane.
Completely oblivious. Yeah, to this gigantic event going on.
And what's also insane is that's like the worst week of Dave's life. All you have to do is ask him about that week. It's great. I always bring it up. Where were we with this movie?
The
car park chase, yeah.
Yeah, so Sting gets off, he's got his gun out, obviously, because he's an American cop. He gets off a couple of good shots, forcing the driver to crash. The driver legs it, grabs a teenage girl coming out the lift and takes her hostage. Tremendous line from Riley. You've got a knife, I've got a gun, do the math. I don't remember that being on my GCSE maths.
If the hostage taker has a knife, but you're the cop and you have a gun, what time does the train arrive at?
Exactly, yeah. Riley's about to put down his weapon when Cliff arrives, causing a distraction and allowing Riley to put two rounds in the henchman. And for this, he gets a slap from the girl's mother. And then back at the station, another bollocking from Captain Optimus Prime for going alone to the drop. Like a grounded teenager, the captain forces Riley to give up his cell phone. he'll get it back when he's mowed the lawn and learned to be responsible. The idea is, I don't know how the technology works in this station, because he has the phone taken off him and he says the next time they call, we'll put it over, it goes over the speakerphone, like, so everybody can hear.
I don't even recall if any of my early phones were able to like have loudspeaker.
There's no Bluetooth speakers in 2000. No. I don't know how they do this.
Yeah.
Particularly as when that call actually happens, it's not plugged into anything.
No. Also, it's, you know, the big scam is that it ends up being Cliff that makes the call. But anyway, we'll get to that. We'll get to that.
Giving away the gigantic twist of this movie.
you did miss the captain in classic, every captain in a cop movie, he threatens to take Riley's gun and badge.
Yes. I think all American scriptwriters have a stamp with that line on, because it's no point typing out. Just get the stamp. Ka-chunk, there we go.
Yeah.
I'll have your gun and badge.
Do we put it in the second act? The first act? You know, it's a hard decision.
Yeah. Riley and Cliff have a showdown in the locker room where they yell at each other about Dad, and Cliff makes an impassioned plea for them to put it all aside and work together. And as we go into another ad break, Riley reluctantly agrees.
Oh, no, you missed the acting of this. the pure acting of Riley saying, Kenzie is all I have.
Oh, yes.
And then Cliff shoots back with, and you're all I have.
Let's kiss.
And I was just like, yes. They're nailing the slop in this. Oh, it was great. Yeah, so we get more adverts. So we have All Star Weekend, which I believe
Ring of Honor.
No, unfortunately. Oh. No. All Star NBA All Star Weekend, with some NBA coach of the time, I believe.
Sure.
Rich Craig just screaming at me. we see Papa John's is responsible for bringing a shutter speed, and that explains a lot. An ad for Puppy Chow, an ad for Vicks Vapor Rub. And an ad for a Dream Home giveaway. Not a lot on this collection.
No. So in a scene accomplished in a whopping four shots, hit bloke arrives at Griffin's place. He tells him the big baddie, this is where we find out his name is Mr. Diamond, wants to see him. And we get a quick look at Kenzie crying and rocking. She's crying and rocking backward and forward, but not at all restrained in what seemed a pretty open room.
While, as I have in my notes, Hank Scorpio's goons work in the background.
Yes.
It was just random worker goons in the background transporting money.
Yes.
All they were missing was Homer coming in looking for cream.
In the photo lab, Riley's taking the camera apart, trying to find out why it's so important. He uses Cliff's phone to call Diamond and sets up with him that they will call him back at 10 o'clock with a new meetup plan. Our brothers have an emotional talk about family, dad being proud of them, all that American stuff. This is the Oscar clip.
I'm sorry. All that American stuff.
Yes. Yes.
Because a British father has never been proud of their son.
I don't give a shit if my dad is proud of me or not. Doesn't bother me whatsoever.
Brilliant.
But look, it's a feature in so many particularly cheesy American films, isn't it? The hero worship of the father comes up so many times, and it's something I've never understood.
Now you have me thinking, is there a British movie where the father's, you know, love for his son is actually important or implied?
Oh, yes. About Time. It's very important in that.
I've never seen that.
Okay.
Okay. So there's one.
There's one, yes. It's the first one I can think of anyway.
Oh, God.
So yeah, this is the Oscar clip as Steve Borden, in a profile close-up, cries.
He did. He legit cried.
Yeah.
Give him credit.
Yeah. There's a guy on his knees waving two halves of an onion around to the camera.
Yeah, he cries when he thinks about how his father died trying to protect Cliff.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and this is where he finally apologises for blaming Cliff for the old man's death, and Cliff forgives him.
So we should explain, so all these flashbacks, I think Cliff was a new enough cop and he was part of like some undercover bust.
Yes.
And the father thought he wasn't ready. Riley didn't want him to go, so he went with him.
Yes.
And the big twist is that Riley said he didn't want the dad to go because Cliff could handle himself.
Yes. Yeah. They're kind of like, they went along as like unofficial backup.
Mm.
And what happens is the dealer's accomplice spots them and tips off the dealer, who gets shot when the guns come out. And then the accomplice grabs dad. Riley tells Cliff to lower his gun, but he won't. And as the boys argue, that's when the crim puts a fatal hole in dad. Because it's a movie, because we've just had the big emotional moment, now is also a time for a big beat in the A-plot, as Cliff goes to where Riley was disassembling the camera and finally spots a clue. We don't find out what it is, as we immediately dissolve to Diamond meeting Griffin on a shitty industrial estate. Griffin gets a dressing down for not getting the camera back and says, we definitely will this time because Griffin will be the one at the handover where Hit Bloke will also off the stinger. Back to the photo lab that we just cut away from. We finally find out why the movie is called Shutter Speed, as Riley and Cliff pull a piece of hidden microfilm from inside the camera's shutter selection dial. They're squinting at it through a magnifying glass when Perry arrives and show these two doofuses the massive microscope right next to them.
I did like that. They're squinting at it, and he just comes along and goes, yeah, I have something for this, and it's a fuck-off massive microscope.
So they put it under there. They deduce that this microfilm contains airport codes, dates, barcodes, and customs clearance codes that the villains are going to use in the part of their smuggling operation.
Now, I will say, this is probably the best bit of backstory in the whole movie, where it's Riley that figures out their airport codes, and they actually give some backstory in that he says, yeah, I worked an undercover drug bust for 6 months in an airport.
Yes.
And all I could do was look at the boards all the time.
Yeah, yeah. He says, I've seen enough baggage tags to make your head spin or something like that, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back to Villain HQ. Diamond demands Griffin shows his commitment to the cause by shooting Kenzie. Of course, when he pulls the trigger, it's empty, but that's enough. That proves he was willing to do it, so he's on board. At the station, the cop brothers put their plan that Lee just spoiled into action. In front of the captain, Riley takes a call on speakerphone telling him he will receive instructions in 3 hours and must come alone. And it is, in fact, Cliff putting on a silly voice in the car outside. And, of course, it's over too soon to be traced.
I do love that he's doing this call outside in the police car park while other officers are walking around in front of him.
Yeah, can you imagine two uniforms walk past while he's going, shut up and listen to me, like he's doing his Batman voice.
I'd like to imagine he had the Kane voice box.
Come to the docks, or I will set myself on fire.
I mean, listen, nobody in the precinct had actually talked to this person before.
No, I guess not. Only that one cop, the woman who shows him around.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she appears to be the only person who's ever spoken to him. I think she's the same person when Sting shows up to the fashion show. She's the one outside as well.
Ooh, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, got paid for two scenes. Well done.
So at this point, we have another set of ads. Some TNT original movies.
Gabriel's Run, starring Eric Roberts and Cary Elwes.
Yeah, and Freedom Song.
Danny Glover.
Danny Glover, yeah.
Also, an ad for horrible-looking microwave hot dogs.
Yes.
I am never eating one of those.
Ballpark singles. Oh. Microwavable hot dogs. They looked awful.
So the American girlfriend I previously mentioned on one visit was like, oh, I have to get you to try this. And it was squirty cheese in a can.
Oh, no.
Yes. Yes. Let me tell you, it tastes more of can than it does of cheese. It made me think of Farshow Squeezy Cheesy Peas.
Cheese can come in many forms. Can form is not one of them.
No, I bet that one's not on ilovecheese.com.
No, and it won't be.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the rest of the ads, we got Oldsmobile, MVP.com, which is a sporting goods store, not Montel Vontavious Porter. Kodak, you can even email your photos online now.
Wow. And you can stop your dog getting red eye, I noticed, in that shit software that comes with your disc.
Although, it did make me think of the amount of CD-ROMs that used to be in my parents' house. They would come with everything.
Yeah. When I moved into this place, I went up into the loft and previous tenants had left loads of stuff behind. I found loads of stuff. And one of the things I found was a CD-ROM of Adobe Photoshop Elements.
Which was probably like the first Photoshop?
No, it's a cut down version. If you didn't, back in the days when you bought Photoshop rather than subscribed to it, as you have to now,
yeah.
There would be the full version and there would be Photoshop Elements, which was a cut down version for 50 quid as opposed to 200 quid or whatever.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. I also found some lingerie up there, which went straight in the bin.
God. Yeah, I'm thankful I only ever moved into a new home and didn't have to put up with whatever was left behind.
Mm-hmm.
We also have an ad for KFC with the animated Colonel.
Why is he holding a video camera?
I don't know. He just come from Girls Gone Wild.
Colonel's Gone Wild.
It's the year 2000. Who knows?
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was our ad break. Some awful food and Kodak.
Indeed. So part two of the plan is Cliff goes to see the captain, tells him Riley's freaking out, needs to be taken home, and he'll do it. At the house, the boys talk about girls and then talk about the night Dad died. And this is where we get the full, complete flashback of what happened. Mm-hmm. So it turns out that Riley's plan was Cliff dropping his gun would distract the guy long enough for Riley to shoot him. And I think this would mean more if they hadn't just done almost the exact same thing by accident in the car park in an earlier scene.
See, I don't think they did it by accident. I think, again, it was just they should have explained this or even kind of semi-explained it a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
Before doing the car park scene.
What I mean by accident is Riley had no idea Cliff was going to come around the corner and cause a distraction.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's fair.
But it's apart from that, it's the exact same technique.
Mm-hmm.
At Griffin's office, Hit Bloke is putting together a crap-looking sniper rifle, telling him to position Riley in front of the window and he'll do the rest. I don't know why he's putting it together before crossing the street and climbing up to the top of the building on the other side of the road.
It's America. Everyone had guns.
Yeah, fine. That is one weird... Oh, God. Tangent again. One weird thing about going to Texas is walking around and seeing signs on shops saying, please don't bring your gun in here.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I've never been to Texas, thankfully.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that would really freak me out.
Yeah. The other ones are all the signs on various buildings that say this place was built with carcinogenic material.
Wow.
Yeah. Horrible. Apologies to America. Well, some apologies to America.
Come here. We bury America all the time on the show.
Fair enough. So Perry shows up at Sting's place with the enhanced prints back from the feds. They show the reflection of three people in a shop window. Mark, Hit Bloke, and Griffin. Now, there's a few problems here. I think all the prints are from the wrong angle, given how the camera was dropped. Hit bloke is definitely holding the wrong gun, because the one in the photos doesn't have the silencer on he had on in the scene. And the biggest problem of all is that Griffin simply wasn't there.
Yes.
Or if he was, from how much of the chase we saw and the angles we see it from, there's no way he was close enough to appear in the single frame of all these zoom and enhanced prints were taken from.
I mean, we don't know that he wasn't in the house with Merc.
No. But I'm trying to think how wide the lens would have to be to get all three people in a shot.
Yeah, so Merc is running away, Hip Bloke is chasing it, and Griffin is just standing there moodily going.
Yes. But is not in the background of the shots we see from in front of Hip Bloke at any point.
And you would think if he was there, Merc would have went, what are you doing here?
Yeah. Bizarre. So Riley and Cliff kick Griffin's door in and badger him for information as Hip Bloke loads the only revolving magazine sniper rifle I have ever seen. He can't take his shot, though, because Griffin is in the way. Griffin explains the whole setup, blah, 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 that it's counterfeiting, and calls the note Euro dollars.
Yep.
Which I do believe was a car rental firm around this time.
Really?
Yeah.
I'd never heard that one.
Yeah. So Hip Bloke takes a shot anyway, and despite clearly having Sting's face right in the middle of his sight, manages to hit Griffin in the back.
Yeah.
So he's either a rotten shot or he didn't calibrate his rifle properly.
It could be either of those things.
Yes. Cliff runs outside and knocks Hip Bloke off the roof by clipping him in the arm, while Riley fails to extract Kenzie's location from a dying Griffin, and we go to another ad break. Our final ad break,
yeah. We finally, 2 hours into this movie, get an ad for Nitro.
Yes. There's been a couple of voiceover things that have been like, we now return you to Shutter Speed, and don't forget to watch WCW tomorrow night.
Yeah. But that was advertising Thunder, and who watched Thunder?
Yeah. What kind of idiot would sit and watch every single Thunder episode?
But not watch Nitro, I mean, yeah. Come on. Another ad for Steel. I think that was number 4 throughout the night. More Sonic. And then, I think...
I know where you're going.
The most important ad of this entire movie. It's the BattleBots World Championship.
On pay-per-view.
On pay-per-view, no less.
Yes.
We see, what's his name? Jamie from MythBusters.
Yes.
We see him controlling his killer robot.
Yes.
The Battle Bowl.
Yeah.
Not the WCW
Wait a minute.
One, but the actual good one.
Oh. Have they selected tag teams of robots at random?
There's no Big Josh here. It's all killer robots. Oh, my God. I was like, yes, this is the most 2000 thing possible.
Yeah. This actually sent me down a little bit of a rabbit hole, because I originally wrote the US version of Robot Wars, but it isn't. They were developed in parallel from the same person. Like one guy came up with the idea of these battling robots and had kind of like done like test shoots and stuff. And he sold the idea to the UK. And then had a falling out with the UK people, and then developed the same idea under a different name in the US.
Wow. Okay.
I just figured it was like rebranded Robot Wars all this time.
Because Robot Wars would have been, it was definitely pre-millennium, right? It was like 99.
Yes.
God.
And the first series was presented by Jeremy Clarkson. It wasn't even...
Was it?
Yeah. It wasn't even... Dave Lister. What's his bloody name? Craig Charles.
Craig Charles, yeah. Yes. Because, again, it's Craig Charles and Jonathan Pierce was the commentator, right?
Yes, and then Philippa Forrester in the later series, very obviously drunk interviewing the robot nerds backstage.
Listen, can't knock it. but yeah, oh God, BattleBots on pay-per-view. I'd love to know what that did.
probably higher than some WCW.
Oh, absolutely, in the year 2000, that's doing more on pay-per-view. Are you ordering that or are you ordering Slamboree?
Oh, I mean, Christ.
God, I want Dave to find us the fucking the pay-per-view boys for that.
You'll never guess what I'm Googling.
God, get Thurston onto this. Yeah, just the most 2000 thing possible is BattleBots.
Yeah.
That was such a thing, such a happening. Like I think if you showed that to kids now, they would be like, okay, like, we make things like this in school all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas, like, it was cutting edge for us.
Hypno disc sliced off my teacher's toe. Yeah. crazy stuff. So.
Right. The closing stretch of the movie.
Here we go. Let's take it home. So, Riley must have got some information out of Griffin's corpse as we see them show up at the industrial estate, spying on the baddies with binoculars. Our heels are loading boxes and Kenzie into cars, getting ready to depart. Riley rolls up on the Sting cycle and offers up the camera again, while Cliff sneaks around behind, sometimes with his gun in hand, sometimes not, depending on the shot. he climbs in through the back of the vehicle that Kenzie is in, hot wires it, and she hits the gas. Sting jumps onto the side and they tear off in a hail of bullets as the rest of the police arrive. The cops and criminals then engage in what I called a directed by Naughty Dog gunfight as they all hide behind waist-high cover and pop up taking shots at each other. It is like The Last of Us and Uncharted.
I did like that Mr. Diamond gets into a helicopter.
Yes.
And says, get me out of here.
Yes.
And then when it doesn't take off, he goes, why aren't we going anywhere? And your man's like, there's a helicopter right above us. I can't go anywhere.
Yeah. And then he gets shot and killed right in front by the sniper in the helicopter,
mm-hmm.
right in front of the camera. And his acting made me believe that he was an actual pilot and not an actor, because he just goes, ugh, and flops back in his seat, like stone dead immediately from this single bullet. So, yes, Diamond makes a break for another car. And I'm calling them cars, but I think they're Ford F-150s with covered payloads. They mm-hmm. are enormous and not suited for car chases.
No. I was like, we see the one in the garage. Mm. That's also, I think, the same type of truck.
Mm.
And I was like, are they Broncos? Are they trying to do the fucking OJ thing again? And I was like, even in the year 2000, was everything still OJ?
Oi. So Sting pulls Kenzie out of the goodie truck and chases Diamond across the area, eventually forcing him to crash through a shed, spiraling and landing on his roof. A camera definitely got wiped out in that stunt, because you see the car sliding towards the lens way too fast to stop. So they definitely sacrificed something for that. Riley approaches the wreckage, but Diamond pops up from off screen and pushes the barrel of his gun into Riley's neck, and he says, I never could get used to driving on the right. This whole film I thought he was German, where they drive on the right.
Yeah,
he's had a German accent the whole movie.
He's definitely German.
Yeah. The actor is Canadian.
Okay,
the actor's from Nova Scotia, but yeah.
The character. I mean, Nova Scotia may as well be Berlin.
Yeah.
you know all those famous Canadian Germans?
Yes. Cliff arrives on the scene and we get another hostage standoff, only this time the hostage is a former WCW world champion. We get a reprise of Cliff, put down your gun. And when he eventually agrees, Riley drops and Cliff shoots Diamond into a crate of toys?
With some kind of soft gimmicks.
Yeah, something that wouldn't hurt too much when he landed on it. You can't just leave me here like this, says Diamond. And I'm like, yes, fucking arrest him. Don't just walk away.
This is the most nonsensical bit.
Yeah. Riley levels his gun at him and then points off camera instead, and somehow, using one bullet, causes what is left of Diamond's truck to explode. Despite that truck not carrying anything so far, so it's empty when Diamond gets into it, and it's clearly empty when it crashes,
mm-hmm.
fake Euros rain down across this scene. Sting's hilarious final quip is, you've got the money, get a cab, as he slides one of the notes into Diamond's waistband. Worst strip club ever.
And then the Young Bucks came out.
Also, he can't. His Euros are useless in America, even if they were real, and they're fake.
Also, they're cops. Why aren't they arresting him?
Yes.
It's not like he's mortally wounded. He got shot in the shoulder.
Yes. I mean, maybe they'll just send a couple of uniforms round to pick him up, but I'm like, get him. Put cuffs on him. So lax. Our epilogue is Kenzie and the lads visiting Mark's grave, and then we cut to Riley and Kenzie exiting the wedding venue and speeding off on Riley's bike. Did your missus wear lavender flares and a feather boa on your big day?
I can't say she did, but also we didn't leave on a chopper.
No.
Like Bruce Willis in Pulp Fiction, so, yeah. You know. The whole scene of Kenzie at Mark's grave, so she can do, like, the whole exposition of, oh, you know, right, Riley, you know, really wanted you to be his best man, he really misses you, but now he has his brother, so fuck it.
Yeah. I lost my brother, but he got his back. What a fair trade.
Oh, God. But yeah, no, the whole wedding, like, for whatever reason, she's in, like, yeah, like you say, purple flares.
Yeah. Maybe that was the thing in 2000. Who knows?
Could they not afford a wedding dress?
They only had $4 million. Come on.
Or they definitely shot this scene at Sturgis. That, do you know what? That would have been such a better movie. A murder at Sturgis. I mean, there definitely had to be at least one.
Oh, I was just thinking this scene at Sturgis. So, like, Ultimo Dragon in the wedding party. And
he could have been the male model.
He could. Body. Yeah, apparently he's incredibly hot, according to Stephanie McMahon, under that mask. Our final shot is we see them smooching by a body of water and then pull out to reveal they have been pulled over for speeding. Ho, ho, ho. The final song is called Happy and Satisfied. Are you?
I mean, it wasn't good. God, I sound like my wife.
No further context required.
Look, yeah, no, the movie was not good. But I will say, by the standards of wrestlers and movies, I don't think it was the worst thing I've ever seen.
No. I was surprised and impressed that there was nothing whatsoever to do with wrestling in this film.
Yes.
So you know how Hogan has to get at least one other wrestler into his movies, usually Beefer. Mm-hmm. Or there's a fight scene with a clothesline and a body slam in it.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing like that. He doesn't hold a baseball bat. This isn't Sting. This is Steve Borden.
Well, also, the fact that Steve Borden hated pro wrestling in the late 90s.
Fair enough. Yeah. Yeah, this is very much his attempt to break away from that.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like... So, okay, firstly, I want to talk about, like, his performance. He's a charismatic guy in wrestling. He's a magnetic presence in wrestling. Mm-hmm. The only time I felt that in this movie are the parts where he's raising his voice, because that's the closest to the Sting I recognize. And the quieter moments, like, I don't think he's got it. Like, he's not... he might be an actor. He's not a leading man.
No. I think he could have... he could absolutely have been, like, the best friend.
Yes.
Character.
Yeah.
Like, he did have that kind of, like you said, screen presence, that kind of magnetism, where you could buy that he'd be, I don't know, like, fucking Val Kilmer's good friend from school or...
Yeah. Imagine if he and the guy playing his brother had swapped roles.
Mm.
Like, that, I think, might have been a bit more believable. Well, I don't know, because they've got to do the age difference thing, haven't they?
Yeah, but also the brother wasn't exactly a great actor either.
No. So that's my other point. Don't think I'm singling Steve Borden out here.
No.
There are no show-stealing performances in this film. Nobody is better than adequate or workmanlike.
I would go so far as to say that, like, Sting, like, I don't think I could say he was the best actor in it, but, like, he definitely wasn't the worst.
He didn't disgrace himself.
No. And, like, you mentioned Hogan. Like, this is infinitely better than any of Hogan's performances in any of his movies.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Infinitely better than Hogan performs in any movie, and I'm including Muppets in Space.
I think, you know, from the movies I've seen, I think, you know, Steve Austin was probably a better kind of character that kind of transferred his charisma to movies a little bit better. You know, Dwayne is Dwayne.
Batista's the guy.
I mean, Batista has been the most successful by far.
Yeah, and he's the best actor of the lot, I think, as well.
Mm-hmm. But, like, when you, like, say Kevin Nash, who's had been in many movies, like, Austin's good, but, like, he's not, you know, far and away better than Sting is here.
No.
Hogan, we know, like we just said, is much worse. Piper, I mean, other than They Live.
Yeah.
Like, could you see have seen this Steve Borden play that Piper role? I think so.
I was thinking the other way around. I was thinking of Roddy Piper in this. Ah, your brother's dead.
Well, I mean, we've long heard about the pilot episode of the Jesse Ventura and Roddy Piper
tag team
show. Yeah,
yeah, that's on YouTube.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, part of me wants to watch it, but part of me's like, I can't. Speaking of which, this also felt like a pilot for a TV show. However, what is special about Riley?
Yeah, there's nothing. There's nothing there.
No. And that's the other thing. What does he do in this film? Because it's other people that do all the important stuff. He's just there at the same time. So yeah. It's his brother who finds the microfilm inside the camera. It's Perry who shows them the gigantic microscope they need to put it under. The only thing he does is recognize the airport codes. And when it comes to the end, he's not the guy who shoots the baddie.
No, he doesn't shoot the baddie.
No, he shoots the baddie's car.
And it's everybody around him that gets murdered.
Yes. So he's like Jessica Fletcher. Maybe he's murder just happens around him all the time.
Suspicious, eh?
Yeah.
I you know what, like I said at the top, I don't know whether it was, you know, the mood I've been in and, you know, not watching as much movies these days, but like, I didn't hate this. I thought this was a pretty easy watch.
No, I didn't hate it either. As I said, it just exists. It's there to fill 2 hours. Mm-hmm. It felt like it was put together so Sting could try out acting and see if he liked it.
Did he go on to do much more?
He has done a few more movies. I had his IMDb open earlier. It's a lot of wrestling stuff, blah, 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 obviously. And then we get down to Revelation Road. He is in two parts of what I can tell are three. Jesus Christ, they're all in the same year. Fucking hell. Revelation Road, which is essentially Mad Max with Christianity.
Oh, okay.
Yes. The rapture happens, and then the whoever's left behind in the apocalyptic wasteland has to make do, as far as I could tell. And he is also in a film called The Encounter, and I will read you the entire synopsis on IMDb. The supernatural experience of five people sat in an abandoned diner with the King of Kings, Jesus Christ.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's all a lot of Christian stuff. And of course, there is Sting Moment of Truth.
Which, actually, funny enough, I was at my son's football game on Sunday evening, or Sunday morning. And I do, you know, when I'm driving to a game, like, so his game is like an hour away. So I said, oh, what do you want to do? Do you want to put on a podcast or do you want to listen to music? He's like, put on a podcast. And he's quite fond of the Five Star Match game. That is on this current Voice Wrestling Podcast Network. So he selected the Sting episode. And it was only when we got like 3 minutes into the episode and I got introduced that I went, oh, I'm on this one. And I got the question of what was the name of the Steve Borden biopic.
That'll show up as a TRL at some point.
And I had no idea. There was one called The Moment of Truth.
I also found an IGN review of this from the time, from the week it aired.
Oh, go for it.
I've got is the last two sentences. Fans of the action movie genre probably shouldn't expect anything new, but the tightness of the multi-layered plot isn't expected. The tightness of the multi-layered plot is a pleasant surprise. New sentence. With Eric Bischoff as an executive producer, seeing a coherent and believable storyline unfold on screen is even more of a shock than usual.
Fucking dead. Cooked them.
Yep.
The only way that review would have been any better if it had a can at the end.
What they did have further down is like they have a second opinion thing for aside from the main reviewer. And the second opinion was from Blake Norton.
No.
Yes.
Get the fuck. That fucking sham.
tying it all back to the wrestling channel. Oh,
talk about, yeah, that's tying it in a neat bow.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you have some stories about that.
No, like, never met him.
Oh, really?
No,
oh,
never okay. met him. Never. I never came over for bagpipe report. I've only been to Ireland once in my life, and it was to go to the TWC studios in a town I thought was called Howth, but turns out it's pronounced Oat by everybody else around.
Oat.
Yes. Yeah, but nobody pronounces the H on either end. So it was just Oat wherever I went. I have passed through Dublin, but never been to Dublin. And yeah, I was there for 24 hours to meet Sean Herbert and see the setup at TWC, and then I went home again.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Wow. Hey, Holt is nice, though.
Yeah, it's a pleasant little seaside town, wasn't it?
Hey, listen, it's nicer than Blackpool.
Fair. Yeah, I've only ever been there by mistake as well.
Right, but yeah, so that's Shutter Speed. Quite an adventure.
Yeah, it's there. It is a movie. Well done.
I'd even go so far as to say pleasantly surprised that I didn't hate it.
Yes.
But Kieran, thank you so much for coming on. Is there stuff you want to plug? Tell us where we can find Nothing Can Like It.
Well, you might as well go and make a cup of tea because it's probably going to be quite long. If you have any interest in listening to me review more movies, whether they contain wrestlers or not, 150 episodes of my old show, Have You Seen, can be found on Spotify and wherever else you get your podcasts. Must See Matches wrapped up almost a year ago now, but we still get listens every day according to the stats. And you could be one of them. It was a project created by Mark Buckledy where he canvassed any and all wrestling fans of Twitter to find out which of the matches that fans think other fans must see. And then we made a podcast discussing the top 104 because that's how maths worked out. Usually with guests, including more than one appearance from both Lee and Dave.
Well, no, exactly two appearances from me.
Yeah. But, which is still more than one. That is linktr.ee/mustseematches. That'll tell you where you can find all the places to listen to that. As we've mentioned more than once, my main show these days is Nothing Can Like It, the only podcast that chronicles the UK's Frontier Wrestling Alliance through its appearance on television. I do that every month with Eddie Sideburns and Andy Ogden, and we are currently working our way through the 2004 season for TWC that I made. Recorded yesterday and out around the time this comes out will be Season 3, Episode 4, covering the first 2 weeks of July 2004. And the debuts of both Sonjay Dutt and D'Lo Brown in the FWA. You can find everything to do with that at linktr.ee/FWApod. We're on Twitter, Blue Sky, and YouTube at FWApod and Instagram at FWA.pod. And I will get a kick in the pants if I do not mention that every month I'm also on Graps and Claps with Andy Ogden as we make our way through the 1990s TV tapings of Orig Williams' Reslo, which is Welsh language wrestling for the channel S4C. And after Greg Dyke cancelled the ITV wrestling slot in 1988, was the only domestically produced wrestling available on terrestrial television until 1999. Mm-hmm. The complete episodes are hard to track down, but all the individual matches are freely available. So with the help of a couple of sources, I've reconstructed the 7-match TV tapings into YouTube playlists, and that's what we review.
Ah, very good.
Also out around this time will be one that hasn't yet been recorded, which is our last episode on the 1990 tapings. Have a look for Working a Reslo on the Graps and Claps strand wherever you get your podcasts. And finally, because I'm about to collapse from doing this Excalibur bit, for me personally, you could follow Kieran Edits on Blue Sky if you really wanted to. I wouldn't recommend it. Thank you very much.
That's all we have for this week. We will be back in 2 weeks' time with another episode. I don't know if I'll be solo or if I'll have a guest or if I'll have a co-host back. Who knows? I don't even know what I got planned. It could be Thunder, it could be something else, but you got to tune in and find out. Obviously, subscribe patreon.com/WCWThunderPod for all of your extra Dave and Lee content. So many shows there. But yeah, thank you all for listening, and I will speak to you all in 2 weeks' time.
Thanks everyone for listening to another episode of Days of Thunder. Days of Thunder was produced by Lee Malone and edited by me, Dave Ryan. Keep up to date with the show and find all the ways to listen to us. You can follow us on Twitter at WCWThunderPod or click the Linktree link in our Twitter bio or in the show notes. I am at The Day to Dave on Twitter and Lee is at Malone_713. Days of Thunder is a part of the Voices of Wrestling podcast network. Follow the VOW network anywhere good podcasts are sold for more fine podcasts than you can shake a stick at. Thanks.
Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Episodes drop every other Monday, where we discuss the biggest Joshi news, review shows, and preview the hottest upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're a new fan or an old fan, we've got something here for you at Jumping Bomb Audio.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
Location, the lab. Quentin only has 24 hours to sell his car. Is that even possible? He goes to Carvana.com.
What is this, a movie trailer?
He ignores the doubters, enters his license plate. Wow, that's a great offer. The car is sold, but will Carvana pick it up in time for...
They'll literally pick it up tomorrow morning. Done with the dramatics?
Car selling in record time.
Save your time. Go to Carvana.com and sell your car today. Pickup fees may apply.